Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello and welcome to this podcast. In today's segment, we'll be talking with Mr. Randy Groves, the Vice President of Engineering at a very leading artificial intelligence firm called Spark Cognition. As we know, AI is becoming a big thing now in cybersecurity, and I think with this podcast, we'll learn a lot more about it. Randy, thanks for your time, and thanks for joining us on the show today.
Thank you. I'm very excited to be here.
Thank you for your time. Now, we asked this of all of our guests. We did some background into your bio on LinkedIn and Google, and it sounds like you got a very, very deep cyber career. I mean, you got a couple of master's degrees, one of them from MIT, very impressive, but you've had years of experience at IBM, being a chief technology officer at Dell, and a couple of startups before Spark Cognition. Can you give us a little bit more about your background and how you ended up at Spark Cognition? And is this a company that you've actually helped create and own also? Or?
Sure. Let me give you some background on that. So, yeah, I've spent 21 years at IBM. I have an electrical engineering degree. So I spent early parts of my career on the hardware side, primarily in developing microprocessors, so the PowerPC microprocessors that IBM still uses in their Unix servers, and then moved over into the Intel and AMD server world, which eventually was what led me over to Dell, where, as you indicated, I was the CTO for their product group. And then that led me to a couple of startups. And each step along the way, the mix of hardware and software became more and more software heavy. And so this is actually the first startup I've been at, which is a purely a software startup. I'm not a founder of this. Spark Cognition was already about 3 years along when I got here, but. Interesting enough, our CEO and founder, Amir Hussein, was my first customer at my previous startup. And so that's how we got connected. And when they were scaling up the engineering organization, they brought me in to run all the engineering and data science here.
Excellent. Sounds awesome. Now, first of all, I want to say congratulations on your $100 million funding round. Wow, that's quite a bit of money.
Yeah.
Can you get into more detail about your company, about your investment? I know you can't give all the details, it's confidential information, but if you can give us some insight and maybe how you generally plan to use the money, hiring employees or coming up with new innovations. And tell us more about what Spark Cognition does. Are you exclusively an AI company, or do you kind of segue into other AI-related products and services?
Yeah, so Spark Cognition, we are at a core an AI company, and we think that's really important. And what we are really trying to do is, leverage our AI and machine learning expertise to help our industrial and defense customers, secure and optimize their assets, in particular their cyber physical assets. So our first product is something called Spark Predict, which basically focuses on that specifically, in that it, there's lots of these high-dollar assets that are out there, like combustion turbines or wind turbines or jet engines or whatever, that are more and more have all these electronic sensors, sometimes have computers that are controlling them, et cetera. And we're able to, take the data from all of those and help identify when those assets are behaving suboptimally, which may mean they just need to be adjusted, or they may be tending towards failure, so we can help avoid downtime or more catastrophic maintenance requirements, those kind of things. So we really, that's where we first got our toe in the water. And out of that led us to a couple of our other products. Second one is I'll talk about is DeepNLP, which, as its name implies, we look at taking natural language input and turning it into structured input that we can actually do something with. And we got into that business because, you know, dealing with the predictive maintenance kind of applications that we were doing, we were having to deal with maintenance records and maintenance manuals and other things that obviously had text in them. And so we were using that technology, and we've now made it, you know, more generalizable so it can be used in other applications as well. And then the third thing that this product, that Spark Predict led us into, was our Darwin automated model building. You know, we have all these customers that have lots of assets. We have to build lots of models. If we were going to scale as a startup, we weren't going to be able to do it by just hiring hundreds of data scientists. So we needed an automated approach for building models. And you know, Amir, back in his time at University of Texas, was involved in some of the early days of using neural evolution techniques for evolving the architecture of neural networks. And so we've been able to take some of that technology and embed it in our Darwin product to basically using AI to build AI. But our fourth product, which is probably most interest to this particular audience, is our Deep Armor product, which uses AI basically to detect zero-day malware and use that to protect the computer assets from attacks from all the various kinds of malicious software that's out there these days.
Okay. Now, how long has Spark Cognition been in business?
So Amir started it in 2013. I think he was the only employee for almost the first full year, but it's just a little over 6 years old from its initial founding as a corporation.
Okay. Now, do you have a presence in other countries as well, too? Are you just located in the U.S. or like in Texas, or are you kind of worldwide? Or?
Well, most of our research and development is done here in Austin. We do have some offshore development resources as well. But then, of course, we have sales presence all over, and we have partnerships all over. So we have a major office in Dubai. We have some folks located in the UK. Hello?
I'm here.
Can you hear me? Okay. UK, Japan, we have partnerships with HITS, which is, you know, in South and Central America, and we've got some, you'll be seeing us expand into other parts of Asia in the not-too-distant future. So, yeah, we're that's part of what we're going to do with our $100 million is start really continuing to expand our global footprint.
Well, that's awesome. Congratulations on that again. Now, obviously, you know, in cybersecurity, I mean, there are like over 2,000 or 3,000 vendors. They all kind of like say the same thing in the end. And now a lot of them are starting to talk about artificial intelligence or AI. And I think a lot of them are trying to bake in that concept into their product line. Now, what separates you from the other cybersecurity vendors that deal with AI and with other companies that just deal exclusively with AI? So, for example, if you have a customer that says, hey, I need an AI platform, I want to do something like an automation for my pen testing or threat hunting exercise, or I want to predict the future, to model, you know, the future of the cyber threat landscape, why should they come to Spark Cognition first versus maybe the other 2,000 vendors who claim to be doing AI in that regard also?
Okay, well, there's a couple answers to that question. First, we've decided to exclusively focus in, you know, like I said, industrial and defense types applications. So okay. We're if you're wanting to go, into some kind of market segmentation analysis or optimizing click-throughs for ads or identify cats in videos, you know, those kind of more, I would call, consumer-oriented kind of applications, you know, that's that's not where we're special. I mean, admittedly, you can use Darwin to develop models for that space, but for the products that we're developing from beginning to end are not going to be focused in that space specifically. So that's one difference. And the other difference, we are fundamentally an AI company, and I think it's important to understand how you distinguish somebody who's really an AI versus who says it because that's the hot thing to say. And if you think about the fundamental difference between machine learning and traditional programming, you just kind of go back to the fundamentals. If you think about traditional programming, somebody sits down and writes an algorithm, they input data, and they get answers out of that program they wrote. Machine learning turns that paradigm kind of on its head. In machine learning, you take the answers and the data, and you use that to create the algorithm. So it's a very different way of going about it. And it has some interesting implications, not only in what that you're able to come up with algorithms that were not necessarily obvious from a mathematical perspective, from a human perspective, because it's being driven by the data. That's the advantage you get with machine learning, is you're able to discover things and find things that you might not think of with an algorithm you wrote by hand. But it also has the important implication that as you get more data and different data, your algorithms should improve. They should get better. And if what you're building doesn't have that characteristics, then it's probably not machine learning. And I think there are a lot of folks who write rules-based things and call them AI because you've got a computer making the decision, but a rules-based system, for example, doesn't get better with more data. It gets better only when you add more rules, right? And so that's certainly another important distinction. And like I said, we are very much focused on having these data-driven algorithms that, as we continue to expand and become bigger, our algorithms are going to continue to get better and provide more value to our customers.
Okay, excellent. Now, who is your typical customer base that you're trying to target? Is it the small, medium-sized businesses, the larger companies, Fortune 500, a combination, and for that matter, yeah, I think you're talking about defense and other industrial applications. Is the federal government also a customer of yours as well?
Most of our sales force is focused on the larger customers. Like I said, for our Spark Predict product tends to focus on expensive assets. So we get involved with all the major airlines and aircraft manufacturers. We're in a joint venture with Boeing, for example, called SkyGrid, which is developing basically the air traffic control system for the coming onslaught of passenger and cargo drones that are going to be flying all around our cities someday. I know that Elon Musk thinks that we should be digging tunnels underneath our cities, but I think Boeing and similar companies all think the much simpler thing to do is just go up in the air and have everything flown around autonomously. And the current air traffic control system is not going to be able to handle that much traffic in real time. And so we're working jointly with them to develop that in the SkyGrid system. So that's an example of a big company worker. We work with a lot of energy companies, oil and gas, anything that has large rotating machinery is a primary target of our Spark Predict product. However, if you look at the other three products, they are not specifically targeted towards just the large companies. So anybody who has data scientists or analysts that need to build models can use Darwin. Anybody who has a PC can use DeepArmor. Anybody who has some kind of natural language documentation or logs or whatever that they need analyzed and structured so they can do something with them can use DeepNLP. So those products can really be used across any size of company.
Okay, excellent. Now, you were talking about your joint venture with Boeing. I'm kind of an aviation enthusiast myself, and I know that these modern commercial airplanes, you know, like the 747-8 and the A380, they're becoming so automated right now. Do you think it'll come to the point where commercial aircraft can literally just have an artificial intelligence software program, and then the plane can just literally pull back, taxi, take off, do the flight, and land all by itself without any pilot intervention?
That's certainly, I think, the goal that they want, and that, you know, there's a lot of that capability is there today, though I think a lot of what's in planes today is still pretty much a rules-based and physics-based algorithms. And obviously they're doing lots of research in this area to get it to leverage more machine learning and those kind of algorithms to improve the performance and ability to interact with things that you hadn't thought. I mean, that's, the advantage of a machine learning algorithm is hopefully it's one that you developed that's more generalized and it can actually react to things it's never seen before, whereas a rules-based kind of approach can often break down when it sees something that doesn't have a rule for example.
I was wondering, are neural networks also a part of artificial intelligence? And if so, how?
Yes. Yeah, so neural networks are probably the big breakthrough that's come in machine learning. I mean, there are a lot of algorithms that have been around longer that are decision tree based and clustering based, those kind of things that we we make use of when it's appropriate. But neural networks, particularly the deep learning ones, are the ones that once you get to a large enough amount of data, you can really get some very powerful models for that. So, for example, like in areas like speech recognition and translation and image recognition, I mean, neural networks have far surpassed any other algorithms in their ability to handle those kinds of problems because of their very powerful capabilities once they're trained.
Okay, excellent. Now, just another side question, because I'm actually going to be writing a book on artificial intelligence with my co-author starting in January, and how it's being used in AI. So the topics that we're touching on are actually machine learning, neural networks, and another area is computer vision. I've done a lot of work in biometric technology, and I know that facial recognition is used in CCTV cameras. And I think computer vision is going to be used as part of that to enhance facial recognition. Is computer vision even considered as a part of artificial intelligence, or have you done any work on that? And if so, could you elaborate on that?
Well, certainly, like you said, a lot of what people do with computer vision is going to have neural networks behind it. Like I said, almost all the image recognition work these days is neural network based. It's pretty fundamental to facial recognition and all of that. So, yeah, that is going to – it's fairly obvious that in that space, deep neural networks are where things are going and where most of the advances are happening right now.
Okay, excellent. Now, we talked a little bit about cybersecurity companies and other vendors claiming to have AI-based products. But in your opinion, in your years of doing this, obviously, what makes a company truly a AI-based company? They offer, traditional AI-based products, exclusively AI-based products.
Well, again, it comes back to the fundamentals that I mentioned. Is the algorithms that they're using fundamentally data-driven, or are they human programmer-driven? And so, for example, our DeepArmor product, you know, all the cybersecurity folks that do malware detection have traditionally used signature-based approaches, right, where you know, you take some SHA-256 or SHA-512 hash of a file and then see if that particular hash, you know, signature has been used before, and is it, you know, is it a clean or malicious one? And that technology has gotten good enough that we found that within a week, almost all antivirus software has you know, passed, those hashes have been passed around, and everybody, you know, catches malware that's been out for a week or more. The real challenge is figuring out how to catch it, because, you know, it all you have to do is change one bit in the binaries, and the hash changes, right? So it's very easy for someone to get around that particular problem, get around that type of approach, I should say. And what we realized in for being able to detect this stuff is, you know, most malware, while it may use different ways of getting into your system, once it gets in, they do a lot of the same things. So it's kind of like, you know, a burglar might break in through your window or through your door or come down the chimney or whatever. But once they get in your house, they all tend to go for the TVs and grab the jewelry or whatever, right?
Right.
And so, you know, the vulnerabilities that are found all the time are constantly getting patched, and new ones are getting found. So, if you will, the entry points into the house are constantly changing. But what malware does once it gets in is often very common. And so, what we do is we, you know, basically unpack the binaries and look inside for those features and those characteristics of what malware does, rather than how it breaks in. And so we, by breaking the down into the binary, running that through our machine learning models, and we have literally millions of samples of both clean software and malicious software. So we have lots of data that with all the answers, so we have exactly the attributes I talked about of what a machine learning model needs, we're able to very effectively figure out which pieces of software are malicious and which ones are not. And it has the characteristic as we get more samples, our algorithms will get better. And the proof point that we have is every day we actually download samples of the latest malware that's just been posted. So it's, you know, basically 0 days. And we do this every single day. We've been doing it every single day now for a year and a half. And we consistently are above 99.5% effectiveness in catching the zero-day malware. The interesting thing is we not only tested against ourselves, but we also tested against the other 50 or so top antivirus vendors out there, and there's almost none of them are anywhere even above 90%, and some of them are down in the 50% range, right? So some of these folks claim to be you know, AI based malware companies, right? So there's some positive proof points there that we are able to consistently catch these 0 days, where a lot of the other folks that have probably grafted things onto their signature-based approaches are clearly not going to do that. And in fact, yesterday we were awarded the Cyber Defense Global Award winner best endpoint protection product. For 2019.
Oh, congratulations.
So, yeah, we're very excited about that. So, anyway, we think, you know, the critical thing for AI is you want to do something that you can't do with signatures, And we think we've accomplished that.
Okay. Now, do you think that my father actually was a professor at Purdue. He was involved in like spinal cord regeneration and brain research, you know, neuroanatomy. Do you think that one day that AI and neural networks will be able to replace the human brain entirely in everything that it does, or will never ever come to that point?
Oh, that's the big question. You know, today's machine learning, I can't remember who it was first coined this, but they call them idiot savants. And let me just give you a very concrete example. You may have read about a year ago where Google's AlphaGo model was trained to play that, you know, the game Go, which is, you know, it's a 19 by 19 grid where you put black and white stones down and flip things over and all that. And it's, you know, viewed as one of the most complicated human games that there was. And it beat the best Go players in the world, right? It was, and it discovered moves that no human had ever tried before, right? So it was, it's obviously well recognized as a huge breakthrough in machine learning and artificial intelligence. But I can guarantee you, if I took that exact same model and asked it to play me in tic-tac-toe, that I would beat it without any problem most of the time, because it's completely outside of its domain. It's something it has no understanding. I said, "What do I only have nine squares? What do I do?" Right? So it's this is called artificial narrow intelligence, is what people are calling today's machine learning models. And what you're talking about, if you want to replace the human brain, you have to get to what is called artificial general intelligence, where you're actually able to learn about things beyond, you know, that you haven't seen before, and reason at a much higher level than just being really good at a very specific task that you've learned really well, right? So the question is, will we have that breakthrough? And there's obviously a lot of people working on it. And you get widely ranging views of how quickly AGI will happen or not. But, you know, I wouldn't bet against it, but it's, you know, Skynet's not going to pop up tomorrow either. So.
Right. It's very intriguing. Okay. Now, is there anything more about deep armor that you'd like to talk about, or?
Our deep armor product is, you know, obviously the highlight of it is its zero-day malware detection capability. But it, you know, our enterprise product does come with a very nice management console, which provides kind of all the, you know, forensics and everything for the enterprise threat intelligence person to, you know, figure out what's going on, deciding what they should do, being able to manage policies, you know, see the state of all of their endpoints. I mean, all that kind of other things that really aren't artificial intelligence based, but are necessary to go along with a really strong endpoint protection product. And we just a month ago released our small business version of Deep Armor, which is it's much more scaled down, really kind of geared for the companies that have 100 or fewer people in them, not really IT savvy, don't have a threat intelligence researcher working for them, but they just want their endpoints protected from zero-day malware. You know, we're very excited about that product as well. And, you know, particularly just within the last month, 20-some of the municipalities here in Texas were infected with ransomware. So, you know, a lot of these, we hear about all the big breaches at the big companies, but, you know, they're now starting to target a lot of these smaller companies because they just, you know, they don't even have a lot of the basic protections in place, and they're kind of an easy target for ransomware. So we think having a solution like this for a small business is very timely.
Excellent. You know, we're talking about all the great uses for for artificial intelligence and how it can be used in cybersecurity. But, you know, being a writer, I've written on maybe a couple of blogs on the flip side of this, that how AI can also be used for the negative, how a cyber attacker can actually use it to, you know, for malicious intent. Now, in your view, does AI introduce any new kinds of vulnerabilities that we should be concerned about, like, especially when it comes to, like, you know, the new variants that are out there, you know, like ransomware, the new variants in phishing, especially, I think, the big fear now is the attack on critical infrastructure, you know, like, you know, nuclear facilities, you know, water pipelines, oil, gas facilities, the electric grid. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, clearly, you know, we know that as our Deep Armor software becomes more pervasive, you know, it's a constant war between the good guys and the bad guys when it comes to malware. So we are fully expecting that there will be folks that figure out how to use machine learning to figure out how to create malware that we can't detect. So I'm sure that the arms race will continue in that space. But the other interesting thing is machine learning models themselves introduce some unique vulnerabilities. And I mean more than just the obvious thing where, you know, somebody uses some kind of buffer overflow in TensorFlow to break into your computer. I mean, because, you know, machine learning models are software, and so you have the same kind of potential for software exploits on machine learning software. But the machine learning models themselves.
Hello? 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 Hello?
says unmuted.
It's not coming through the... Here, maybe I'll drop my phone and see if it goes up through the other one.
Can he hear us?
Muted.
Hello. Hello?
Okay, let's get back into our show, Randy. Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now. Where was I?
Okay, let's get back into this. So basically, I think we're talking about the Deep Armor product. And I think we're talking about the zero-day malware and so forth. So we were talking about if AI can introduce any kind of security vulnerabilities, like the critical infrastructure. Do you remember where you left off, and maybe we can pick it up from there?
Yeah. So I said, obviously, we think that once Deep Armor is successful out there, we're going to get folks that are going to use machine learning to come up with malware that tries to get around our protections, right? So that's going to be an arms race for sure. It's one of those things that it's going to continue to go on in that industry. Machine learning itself introduces some of its own unique kind of vulnerabilities, not just the fact that, because it's software, it's going to have software vulnerabilities that you could use to exploit to get into computers, because TensorFlow or whatever has a software bug in it. It's more some unique vulnerabilities that are due to the fact that you have a neural network model that's really difficult to understand as a human being, and the algorithm is delivered, is derived from the data and the answers that you give it and train it on. And so it's really important that you understand and control the data and the answers that are used to train the model. And let me give you, obviously if somebody wanted to give you wrong answers to a test, and that's what you studied, you're going to get wrong answers on the exam. Same model is going to do the same thing. So if you obviously want to be very careful of the data that you're using to train your model. And there's been examples, as you pointed out, in face recognition where this happens accidentally sometimes, where a lot of the facial recognition software out there today has been proven to be very poor when it comes to recognizing people of color, and because the data set that they were trained on did not have a very representative set of people of color. And so that was an unintentional mistraining of the model. But you have to be careful of people that are going to try to maliciously mistrain the model. And an example of where you might not be able to control your training data is an example of what spam filters run into even today. A lot of what they use to label as answers is the input they get from people who mark their email as either spam or not spam. And while probably most people are doing that in good conscience and giving them good labels of what is spam or not, you can imagine someone whose business is trying to write spam is probably trying at the same time to give you bad information and mark some of examples of their spam as good mail, right? And so people who write spam filters have to spend a lot of time curating the labels that they get from these unknown third parties that they can't necessarily trust the labeling that they get from. So that's one example of the kinds of new vulnerabilities you can get. Another is examples was the fact that when a model sees something, data that it hasn't seen before, and how is it going to react? And there are examples out there today of people who've taken image recognition software that's being used for autonomous vehicles, and they put like a yellow sticky note on a stop sign, and that image recognition software calls that a yield sign rather than a stop sign, which is obviously a bad thing. You need to make sure that your model is well trained to be robust to a wide variety of inputs and not easily fooled by some small change in the environment. And then the final thing that people have to worry about is if you're this is a very common thing that people start with pre-trained models, and the reason they do that is because they often don't have access to all the data that someone like a Google or somebody has. So like Google puts out a variety of pre-trained models for like language processing. So one that's the hot thing in natural language processing right now is a model called BERT. And they've literally trained it on millions and millions of sentences and words that most people wouldn't have access to. And so it's a good place to start with because, you may as well start from that very solid base. But what you don't know is it's also would have been very easy for somebody to put a back door, if you will, into that model that kind of allows it to when seeing a certain specific input, give a very specific output. So you could imagine the facial recognition software being trained or having a back door in it that says if somebody puts up a certain symbol next to their face, that it is automatically would identify them as a different person than they are, right? And that could be buried inside a neural network, and you would never be able to figure it out as a human being. And so it's really important for you to understand where the pre-trained models are that coming from and make sure that there aren't any trapdoors that are in there if it's really critical to the application. So anyway, those are just some examples of the kind of the uniqueness, unique kind of security vulnerabilities that machine learning models could have.
Okay. Wow. Didn't realize it went so deep like that. Wow. Now, how do you plan to maintain your competitive edge? I mean, the AI market's obviously right now, I think people are just starting to understand it's becoming the big buzzword, but over time and probably in a reasonably quick time, you're going to see the market gel and there's going to be a lot of competition, especially with these cybersecurity companies trying to come up with anything, everything that they claim to be AI related. How do you plan to maintain your competitive advantage that you have right now and to try to keep ahead of that curve?
Well, one of the advantages of an AI-based company is as you get more data and more examples, your algorithms get better. And so, the fact that we're ahead of them, right now means that as we continue to get more data, we should continue to get better. Obviously, we're going to begin to take AI approaches into other areas. You know, we initially with Deep Armor only, we initially evaluated just executable code, but we've, you know, since added models that look at office documents, whether it's, you know, a spreadsheet or a PowerPoint or a Word document or the open office versions of those, because again, documents now are often source of malware these days with macros embedded in them. So we've taken our technology and expanded it to documents. We're extended it to PowerShell scripts now for in-memory attacks. And so we're going to continue to take our experience and approaches and apply them across more and more vectors of attack, and then even start looking at detecting anomalous behavior. If you think about it, what we do in Spark Predict is basically look at industrial assets and figure out when they're operating in an abnormal or a state they've never operated in before, which in that case, obviously, you're trying to either tune the asset or fix it before it goes bad. And you can imagine in a computer system, if it's acting in an abnormal state, there's a high probability that, you know, it's been infected with some kind of malware. And it's an additional way to detect anything that happens to get through our static analysis filter. So there's lots of ways we can continue to expand the capabilities of what we're doing with Deep Armor.
Okay. Now, just another side question. What kind of intelligence or data feeds do you use for your product, or is that something that you really can't get into? Or
You mean for Deep Armor in particular, or for all the products?
Or just in general, like Deep Armor or any other product, or just AI in general, I mean, that you've dealt with.
Well, for Deep Armor, fortunately, particularly when it comes to Windows executables, a lot of data is out there for both clean and malicious files to look at, right? So that's fairly straightforward, and it's something that, you know, the industry shares with each other. So that's been very nice. We have, I guess the additional challenge that we have in our industrial space, as I said, you know, machine learning models are typically done by taking lots of data plus the answers to develop your algorithm. And in the industrial space, I've got a combustion turbine. I have lots of data. That's not the problem, because they run for, you know, years on end, and we have data for all of that period of time. What I don't have is lots of examples of it actually failing. So I don't have a lot of the answers, if you will, at least not the answers that I care about. I have lots of answers that says, yes, it's running normally, but I don't have lots of answers of, yes, it failed. And even when I do have a failure example, I rarely have an example of the same failure twice, right? So it makes it particularly challenging to develop machine learning models in what's called a very imbalanced data set, in which you have very little of the class that you're trying to predict and a whole lot of the other class that you don't care about. And so we've had to develop a lot of unsupervised and semi-supervised approaches and technologies to allow us to make those kind of valuable predictions in the absence of having a lot of good examples of the failures we're trying to detect.
Okay. Now, what is the most, the accomplishment that you're most proud of at Spark Cognition?
I would say what I get the most excitement out of is when we deploy a new model to a customer and they start actually using it, and you know, when they come back and say, you know, we never knew this could happen, or we never knew that, this kind of thing would happen. Or I remember We did one model with for a customer that was on a battery pack, and we came back and said, well, there's something strange about every 12th cell in your battery pack. And they went, what, really?
Wow.
And so it's basically anytime we can give them an insight that none of their other approaches gave them, and they're actually, you know, it's helping them run their businesses better, and that's the value that we love to provide to our customers.
Okay, excellent. Now, I can't remember if we touched on this or not, but how are AI models different than traditional softwares? I think you talked about signature profiles. And what are the benefits of using an AI approach versus like traditional software approaches?
So AI models, like I said, are programmed from the data and the answers rather than from to create the algorithm. So basically, if you think about it, an AI model is an algorithm. In fact, in theory, a neural network can be, if you will, programmed or can learn any function, right? So it's a universal function learner, if you will, in a mathematical sense. So that makes it incredibly powerful. It doesn't mean you don't have to figure out what the function is and then write the software. Given the data and the answers, it will learn what that function is, which is very powerful. And the advantage that has, and the big advantage it has, is it allows you to come up with something that's more general than what you would have come up with as a human. And so it allows it to deal with situations and that it maybe hasn't seen before, and able to perform better even than humans in a lot of tasks. And that's the big advantage that artificial intelligence and machine learning has over traditional programming.
Okay, excellent. Now, another question, Ed, I'm trying to find the word here. Maybe reliable is the word to use, but or no, accurate. How accurate can AI be in predicting, like, the cyber threat landscape for the future? Suppose you give it a bunch of data, it learns, and then we want to learn what the threat variants are, like the next day or the next week. How much granular detail can an AI tool do that?
Well, a lot of that depends on what they're trying to predict, right? So, like, as I indicated, we're over 99% accurate in detecting zero-day malware today, which is, you know, pretty accurate. When you start and that's, you know, a very straightforward, what we call supervised learning type problem, right, where we have a whole bunch of examples and we have them all very well labeled as to what's good and what's bad. And so in those kind of cases, you know, machine learning can do really well. When you start getting into, I'm trying to figure out if something's acting abnormally, AI models are really good at detecting, hey, I haven't seen this before. That's not the problem. The problem is detecting those abnormalities that are relevant, because it turns out, in particularly if you're looking at a network or even a computer system, there are so many states that it gets into that probably the model has never seen before, that it will constantly be thinking that things are not normal, because you know, in that case, you can overwhelm the threat analyst with a whole bunch of false positives that basically said, hey, you know, I've never seen the memory and CPU usage exactly this way before, and that may not be a problem, right? And so there has to – having an extra layer of intelligence on top of the anomaly detection that figures out what are the relevant anomalies versus the benign anomalies is, I think, the challenge that those kind of approaches still have in some of the more complicated scenarios.
Okay. Well, finally, as we wrap up our show, where do you think AI is going to be most applicable in cybersecurity in the next 5 years, or even next year? Where do you think AI will make the most impact?
Well, I think it clearly is demonstrated already that it can have a huge impact on zero-day malware. I think there's going to be some potential breakthroughs in the area of detecting unusual activity, whether it's activity on the network coming through your firewalls or communication between applications or those kind of things. I think there's a lot of work going on in that area that will help IT organizations figure out better when their network has been infected or is under attack. And I think that's a big area of opportunity for security.
Okay. Excellent. Well, Randy, we thank you very much for your time this afternoon. And as I start to write this book next year with my co-author in January, I think we're going to have a lot more conversations and a lot more questions to ask you. So I hope to have you again as a guest here in the near future, especially as
awesome.
We start to write our book. Okay?
Oh, that'd be
Take
great,
care. Have
thanks.
A great afternoon. Thank you, Tom.
All right. Thanks.